Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Bills have wrapped up their Friday practice on the day, getting set for the Dolphins game on Sunday. Head coach Sean McDermott says he is encouraged about the chance for wide receiver John Brown to play in Sunday's game. He did more in practice today than he did yesterday. Brown kind of nursing himself through a groin injury. Limited work yesterday. Matt Milano, linebacker, Tyler Kroft, tight end, and Corey Thompson, linebacker. They're going to wait and see how they come through Saturday's practice before they make a final determination on whether they can play against the Dolphins. As for the Dolphins, they will be without veteran safety Rashad Jones in Sunday's game at Buffalo. They've also ruled out center Daniel Kilgore. Dolphins head coach Brian Flores hopeful that cornerback Xavien Howard will play. They don't want to have a setback, though, and Howard missed last Sunday's game against Washington. The Bills have held opponents to 17 points or fewer in every game so far this season, the first time in franchise history they've done that. 1 o'clock on Sunday, the Bills and the Dolphins here at New Era Field. I've got the call of the game on the radio with Eric Wood, Sal Capaccio on the sidelines right here on our flagship radio station, WGR Sports Radio 550. NFL watching Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. The report today from NFL Network is that Mahomes suffered a dislocated kneecap last night, but did not suffer significant additional damage, according to an MRI conducted today. He will seek additional opinions, and the plan for him is to return the season after a brief absence. Cincinnati Bengals going to play without Cordy Glenn for another week. The team announcing today they've suspended the former Bills tackle for one game for internal disciplinary reasons. Cordy Glenn's been on the reserve suspended list and will not count against the 53-player roster while serving the suspension. The Bengals say they have no further comment at all. And NFL players have signaled to owners that they would be open to discussing expanding the regular season to 17 games as part of a new CBA, as long as the player's share of league revenue would be increased. UB Bulls play at Akron tomorrow. The Bulls are 2-4 this season, and the Sabres California road trip moves on to play at San Jose tomorrow night. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Chris Brown is with us to start hour number two, as Steve Tasker has the day off. And we are joined on the line by executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer for NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Hello, Greg. Say hello to Chris Brown. It's me and Chris Brown here today.
Murph, Chris, how are you?
We're doing great. Well.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Hey, Chris and I were talking about this Bills-Dolphins game, and as Chris has said a couple of times, it's a tough sell. I mean, it's hard to convince people. It is. It's hard to convince people that the Dolphins should be taken seriously. I mentioned to Chris, it's been a long time since I've seen an NFL team so devoid of talent as this year's Dolphins appear to be. What do you think?
In all honesty, I had to look at some of their players and see who they were.
Yeah.
And that's very rare, Murph, with me, and I'm being totally honest, because I watch college players. I evaluate 250 college players every year after the season. I'm very familiar with who plays in the NFL. And I had to truly look up a number of their players to see who they were playing.
And now we know that Rashad Jones is out, one of the few recognizable players. Xavien Howard is a question mark for Sunday. I mean, that's a thin secondary, and I'm not saying Josh Allen is going to light them up and have the first 300-yard passing game for this franchise in about 40 games, but that certainly does not bode well for a competitive game by any stretch of the imagination, does it?
No, but I will say this, and I think you guys will understand this. You know, look, we've talked about the Bills' offense. We've talked about Josh Allen. And for the most part, I think Josh has played well, and I think that he's improving incrementally. Obviously, the Patriot game was not a good game, but I think for the most part that there's been improvement. But I also think it is an offense that is not necessarily a lighted-up offense. You know, it's not the kind of game where you just go into it now on a Friday saying, hey, they're going to win this game 35-10, no problem. And when games are close, you know, you always have to be a little careful. So I would expect that their defense would have a chance to dominate in this game. But I still, you know, you just hope that you're not in the fourth quarter, Murph, and you know this. You've seen too many of these games in your years in Buffalo where all of a sudden in the fourth quarter it's 13-10 and you're in a nail biter where one play changes the whole game.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, and you've seen this Buffalo offense over the first five games this season, and I mentioned this to Chris and to Steve earlier this week. My sense is with the players that they have a chance to get back in the lineup this week, including Devin Singletary, including Tyler Croft, and might be his first game as a Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know if we really have a good sense yet of the identity of this Buffalo offense. Things could change if these guys, potential contributors, come in and do their thing, right?
I mean, look, I always liked Tyler Croft. I remember when he came out of Rutgers, I thought he was a very athletic tight end, went to Cincinnati, has faced injuries throughout his career, but I think that ability-wise, he gives you some dimensions as a receiving tight end. Yeah, no question. They'd like him to become a factor in what they do. I think the identity, I think they'd like to run the ball. I think they'd like Josh Allen to probably be more settled as a pocket player and only move as a parachute as opposed to let's make scrambling a part of his game. Obviously, there will be design runs depending on field position, field location, down and distance. But I think when all said and done, you'd like to keep working toward Josh being an efficient, effective pocket quarterback.
So, Greg, with Devin Singletary looking like he's going to be back in the lineup this week, I mean, I think we all know Frank Gore is largely a between-the-tackles type runner. How does Singletary getting back into the fold here kind of diversify their running game, if you will, based on what you may have seen from him the first 2 weeks of the season before he got hurt?
Well, Chris, I think what you look at is the kind of runs they did with him. The runs they did with Singletary were outside runs, which you're not really going to do with Gore because they pulled the center and the guard or both
right.
guards. They got him on the perimeter, on the edge. And I think that's what they'd ultimately like to do. You get what we call pin-pull concepts where you pull linemen and then have your receivers blocked down inside and they pin inside. So I think those were the runs that were effective with Singletary. We saw that in the preseason. We saw that on runs before he got hurt. So he gives them a perimeter dimension and some speed on the edge, which every team wants to have.
Hey Greg, there was a great stat put together by your folks at NFL Matchup about kind of go-to receivers, and it showed that Cole Beasley has an 18% reception rate and passes aimed from Josh Allen in his direction. That tells us that Josh has a comfort level already built up with Cole Beasley, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, the last game, you know, those kinds of throws are critical because those are the chain movers, Murph. You know, obviously Cole Beasley is not a vertical player. He's not going to average 16, 17 yards a reception. What you're counting on with Cole Beasley for the most part, if it's second and long or third and six, is that he works inside with pivot routes, with option routes, and that Josh Allen delivers the ball. You know, the key thing is when it's third and six, if Cole Beasley catches a pass and it's for 8 yards, that's a good play.
Yep.
And those are the kinds of throws that we want to see Josh Allen make more of, and that's why Cole Beasley was brought in. There's no mystery to what Cole Beasley is. That's the kind of receiver he is.
And flipping it around kind of to the other side of the ball for the Bills here, Greg, I mean, another stat that you guys had brought up, and I think it's been documented before just because they've had so much success, is the defense getting off the field after just three plays. I mean, they have the second highest three-and-out
yeah.
percentage in the league. Going against this offense of Miami, it figures to get even better at playing at home, right?
You would certainly think so, Chris. I mean, this Miami offense, the offensive line is kind of in a work in progress throughout the season, different guys playing different positions. They really haven't developed any kind of consistent pass game at all. So you would think that this Buffalo defense, which I really enjoy watching, they're so fundamentally sound, they're execution efficient, they don't make mistakes. You would think that this defense would be in a good position to play well on Sunday and really not give Miami many chances to score.
We're with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer, NFL Films. So the Dolphins make the move to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bills know him pretty well. Bills fans certainly do. What do you think Miami expects to get from Fitzpatrick that maybe they didn't get in the first two games this year?
You know what? Your guess would be as good as
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, you know me well enough to know that I don't rip coaches. I never do that because I know how hard they work, and they're watching tape and they're doing what's best for their team. But it was a week ago that they announced that Josh Rosen would be the starter for the rest of the season. And then this week they obviously took Rosen out and put Fitzpatrick in and now named him the starter for Sunday. So I'm not sure what they're thinking, and I'm just being totally honest. You know, so look, they're probably looking at him as a veteran quarterback playing against a defense that is really difficult to play against, and that a veteran would have a better chance to execute their game plan against this style of defense than Josh Rosen. That would be my guess.
And then, I mean, as if they didn't have enough to deal with, you know, we see the news about Kenyon Drake and how he's on the trade block and how he wouldn't mind a change of scenery. He's probably not alone in that locker room and thinking that way. So how do you, as Brian Flores, as a head coach, how do you kind of keep this train on the track with all of this ancillary stuff going on?
Oh, that you know what? That's way beyond my simple mind, Chris. My investment portfolio is not big enough to have to answer that question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, it's a tough deal. They're not a very talented team. They have a lot of injuries. Obviously, they did play a competitive game against Washington and lost, but I don't know. I don't know how you do that. You just look, we know coaches. You guys know coaches. Coaches don't think like that. They just come in and they grind and they work and they put together a plan and they believe that plan will be effective against the given opponent. That's all you can do.
Hey, Greg, let's get you to some of the other issues, some of the games going on in the NFL. And Pat Mahomes, we find out just moments ago, he's going to miss some time. The MRI showed no real significant damage to his kneecap. But I heard that you were indicating, I think on Ross Tucker's podcast perhaps, that with his earlier injury, Mahomes had not really been himself even before he got hurt last night, huh? What did you see?
Well, I can't speak to how his previous injury affected his play. I can only tell you what the tape showed. And the last three games, teams had played high percentage man-to-man against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs had struggled a bit. Because when you play man, you're challenging an offense. You're challenging receivers to win and to run precise routes to create separation. You're challenging the quarterback to throw on time into tight windows with precise ball placement. Over the last three games, Mahomes had not done that. Mahomes had been very loose and a bit undisciplined with his mechanics. And I know there were a lot of people when he came out of Texas Tech that were concerned a bit about that, that he was that style player. He also missed some wide open receivers. There were other times he didn't turn it loose to open receivers. So Mahomes had not played particularly well. You know, we don't know how it would have played out. Look, he's a very, very talented thrower. That is inarguable. But he had not played particularly well for the reasons I just suggested.
He's human.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's the one thing that has now become such a big issue when you evaluate quarterbacks, and we see it with Josh Allen as well, is the balance between playing with precision from the pocket within structure versus the ability to be a little looser and play outside of the structure. And there's a balance there. And the quarterbacks that can do it, my guess is you don't want to take that away from them, but you don't want that to be the foundation of their game. So there's a strong balance there. You know, when Pat Mahomes makes great throws falling away or stepping into the bucket when he doesn't need to, do you say to Patrick Mahomes, hey, that's not good, we have to be better? Or do you say, great throw? I'm not a coach. I don't know the answer to that.
And while Mahomes goes out of the lineup for the Chiefs, it looks like Saquon Barkley's moving into the lineup for the Giants this week, has the green light. And we haven't seen much of him with Daniel Jones together in the lineup. So how does that – I mean, obviously it's going to make life easier for Daniel Jones, I would think, because we would expect, what, more eight in the box, right, Greg?
Well, I think you get that anyway. And, you know, again – you know, the big myth is that you can't run against eight in the box. Obviously, good running teams always run against eight in the box because that's what teams play. And teams by formation know they're going to get eight in the box by personnel and formation. So that's one of those sort of gospel myths about the NFL that holds no truth whatsoever. But the Giants are going to try to run the ball. And they'll use Barkley, I believe, in the pass game as well, both offset in the backfield and detached from the formation. He's an outstanding receiver, and they'll make him a focus of what they do. Now, Engram is back as well, and Engram is a very intriguing player because of how he can be used.
Greg Cosell is on the line with us from ESPN's NFL matchup. Greg, another game that is interesting, I think. It's the Colts, who would like to make a run at the Houston Texans in that division, but Deshaun Watson's playing at virtually an MVP level right now, isn't he?
Yeah, and I like Deshaun Watson, but I think one thing that's been overlooked, Murph, because, you know, Deshaun, from the time he came in the league, he was a big name, deservedly so, is this team's running the ball very well. And first of all, they run the ball on first down at a high percentage. People might not be aware of that. Carlos Hyde, because he's been discarded from a number of teams and no one thinks about him, has actually been a really important part of what they do. Now, Watson certainly is a very good player. He's only going to get better, obviously, as he gains more experience as well. And you know, he's a good thrower. He can move. Their O-line has gotten significantly better, which I knew it would. They're playing with three first-round picks. One of them got hurt, but he'll be back. And I have to tell you, watching them last week against the Chiefs, Laremy Tunsil, he was dominant. He looked like the absolute prototypical left tackle.
And then, you know, going from a quarterback that's, you know, taking off, let's go to two that might be done. The top two picks in the 2015 draft, I mean, Mariota and Winston. Oh. And the irony of this for me, Greg, and I don't know how you feel about this, but you have one guy in Jameis Winston who cannot avoid mistakes and hasn't been able to his entire career. And in my opinion, you got a guy like Mariota who, if anything, has been too conservative through the course of his career. I don't know how you feel, but these guys might be at the end of their rope here as far as their NFL starting careers go.
Maybe not Winston as much as Mariota, because I think Arians will still look at Winston as a talented player who he can fix. Mariota has had a number of issues throughout his career, and he's had moments, of course. He was a number two pick in a draft, but he's a little difficult to watch at times. His mechanics have been poor, lower body mechanics have always been a little poor. I always sense watching him, Chris, that he doesn't have an innate understanding of what would be viewed as open in the NFL, and therefore he leaves a lot of throws on the field by not turning it loose, which leads to sacks, which automatically gets assigned to the offensive line when they're not all the offensive line's fault. He's certainly not a turn-it-loose thrower, and his accuracy and ball placement has been very erratic and inconsistent.
Greg, here's an interesting game late Sunday. The Ravens at Seattle. You guys probably deal with that on the NFL matchup show.
And yeah, I dealt with it. Murph, you're 100% right.
Good guess by me. Tell me what you said in your analysis of the course of action for the Ravens with the quarterback. Should they let him run that much, do you think? And should they do it this week against Seattle?
Well, I think their offense, the foundation of it is the run game, with Lamar Jackson being a significant part of that. They're a pistol formation-based offense. They like to run a lot of base plays from different formations and different looks. They just get to base plays differently. Jackson's a meaningful part of that. At this point in his career, he's a better runner than he is a thrower. The Seahawks will do what they've been doing all year. They're lined up in their base defense. They're anathema to the rest of the league. The Seahawks play in their base defense about 70% of the snaps. No one does that. It's more than twice any other team in the league, and they'll line up with a 6-1 front, six across, and the one stacked linebacker, Bobby Wagner. And they'll try to keep Jackson from getting outside and outflank their defense.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on the job that Greg Roman has done with Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense. I think he did a good job here in Buffalo with less than optimal conditions, and it seems like he's kind of hit a stride now with that team in Baltimore.
Well, I think he's playing to what his quarterback is.
Yeah.
Don't forget, he was the OC in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. So you understand the strengths of your quarterback and the limitations of your quarterback. So you play to the strengths, which involves them in the run game. And ideally, what that does is it creates some hesitation, indecision, and confusion for certain defenders who are in conflict. And it creates and defines easier throws by NFL standards. That's what you're trying to do with quarterbacks who are not great throwers, like Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson.
And another matchup that I know Bills fans will have a secondary eye on is the Monday night game between their two division rivals, the Jets and the Patriots. Everybody's gaga after Darnold's big game against Dallas in his return from mono, but he's going against the number one defense in football that has put a stranglehold on just about every quarterback they face this year. Should we expect Darnold to maybe take a step back from what we saw him do against Dallas last week?
You know, Chris, you know what's amazing to me? You know, I don't spend a lot of time looking at stats because I try to watch film and make my observations based on film. But the Patriots have played six games. You know how many third down conversions they've given up in six games?
What is it, two? Ten.
That's ridiculous. Ten. And they line up. There's no mystery to what they do from a coverage standpoint. They line up. They play man-to-man. This will be a tough go for the Jets because their receivers are going to have to win and separate versus man. Maybe Darnold's going to have to move around to try to create more time, but it's going to be very difficult to execute against this man-to-man coverage, and they play man-to-man a high, high percentage of the time.
Greg, one more game to ask you about, team to ask you about, at least the Rams. How does Jalen Ramsey help solve their issues after, you know, their recent struggles? They come east to play the Falcons on Sunday. Is Jalen Ramsey the answer for them?
Well, I think if he plays offensive guard or center, he would be.
Right. Their problems are on offense, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're having some offensive issues. I think defensively, they've been up and down. I'm going to be very interested to see what Wade Phillips does because he's been a predominant zone coach this year. They play a lot of zone coverage. Of course, the Jaguars did too. I think Ramsey has ideal traits to play man-to-man, but the Jaguars didn't ask him to play a ton of man-to-man either. So we'll see, because don't forget, when you play man, it's not just Jalen Ramsey. There's other players that have to play man-to-man as well. And now their corner opposite Ramsey is Troy Hill, and their slot is Nicole Roby-Coleman, and they have to line up and play man as well. So Wade Phillips and the defensive staff have to decide if, hey, man is our best approach for everyone in the secondary, or if it's not, then we're still probably going to play some zone.
Going to be interesting. Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We'll look for you this weekend and talk to you again next Friday. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Greg Cosell is executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Had some interesting things to say about the NFL, and I think like many of us, it's hard to find interesting things to say about the Bills-Dolphins matchup, isn't it? And you could sense that talking to Greg a little bit.
With some of his answers, yes. So that's why we went to some of the other games that are a little – because there are right? some really attractive games yes. on the schedule this weekend, like some real entertaining potential there with some of the matchups and even the Monday night game, which everybody will get a chance to watch. You know, they won't be glued to their own team, including the Bills fans here. And that'll be a game that Bills fans will be interested in. You know,
sure.
Can Darnold do something to at least make the Patriots defense look human? Because they have just had it on.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Full-blown lockdown since the start of the season. And really, it's kind of buried the lead, which is Tom Brady doesn't look the same.
You're right.
And that's been completely forgotten because they're still undefeated, and it's all because of how effective their defense has been.
Their defense has been great. Did you see this stat? I wrote about it today in a piece that's up at BuffaloBills.com. Patriots, historically great start to the season defensively, allowing just 8 points per game through their first six games. That's a record-setting pace in the Super Bowl era, but I found this interesting. Over the course of NFL history, in the Super Bowl era anyway, five teams over those years have finished the season allowing less than 10 points per game. None of them have won a Super Bowl, have gone on to win the Super Bowl.
I think a couple, though, may have gotten there, right?
Got there, but not win it.
Right.
Does defense win championships? That would indicate no.
And it's interesting because we've had that conversation with Coach McDermott, too, and his take on it is you got to be good at everything.
Yeah.
You got to be good at everything. You can't just be some dominant defense and think you're going to win. And the reason why is when you get to the playoffs, everybody's good, like really good. I mean, you're talking about the top 12 teams in the league in most cases. You know, maybe some team lucks their way in or backs their way into the postseason. But on the whole, those teams are usually elite at something, but in most cases are pretty darn good at something else too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all travels back to the mean when you get to the postseason. So you better be good at everything or at least decent in one of the three phases of the game and really good in the other two if you're going to advance in the playoffs.
We're going to talk more about this game as the show moves along. We've got Lorenzo Alexander coming by at 2. Matty Glab standing by to join us when we return. Bills Dolphins, this week's game sponsor is Great Lakes Cancer Care. Together, we're bigger than cancer. We've got more coming up. Come on back with us. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Chris Brown is in for the vacationing Steve Tasker. It's a one-day vacation. And joining us in studio right now is the Bills reporter, covers the Bills and the Sabres for Pagula Sports and Entertainment, Maddie Glab. Hello, Maddie. How you been?
Hello. I've been good.
Host of Bills
tonight, yes.
And you got a show coming up this Sunday night after the game?
Yep, with Fred Jackson.
What time does that air?
That airs at 11:30 on MSG. We also do a live version, Bills Tonight Digital. That's right after the game. That's where you can catch the press conference for head coach Sean McDermott and Josh Allen.
And so, that shows up at Buffalo Bills social media
yeah,
sites.
On social media, so social. Twitter, Facebook, the app. So
great. Yeah. So you got back to work. What did you do in the bye weekend?
Bye week, I spent the bye week in Buffalo. So I relaxed. I went to Toronto on Saturday. I've never been to Toronto.
That's not spending the bye weekend in Buffalo.
Well, just one day. It was a day trip.
That's fine.
So
yeah,
it was good to be around.
What did you think of Toronto?
I loved it.
Huge.
It was very huge.
Yeah.
It's so clean, too.
A lot of Bills fans.
Major metropolitan city.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of Bills fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Maddie. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you later. No, Maddie's here to talk about a couple of things post-bye week as far as what you're looking at. Tell me your approach to this. What have you been thinking about here?
So I was thinking, okay, this is a good team. This is a great defense. Obviously, we want to see the offense progress in a lot of ways. But if I was going to be nitpicky, and if we want the Bills to be a playoff contender that gets through the first round, we need to see a few things out of this team.
Okay.
I want to see. Hopefully they can do it. And this is me being very nitpicky in things.
We pick nits all the time around here.
Yeah.
So do the callers. Just
So what do you want to see? Give us some of the ideas.
So
what you're
number one, I think Josh Allen needs to build off his performance with the Titans. So we saw him have a better performance statistically, 98.3 rating. He had confidence right out of the get-go with those passing plays, some of those probably being scripted right off the bat to get his confidence going. He had that one interception that, of course, you can do without, but let's build off of that. Let's build off of completing those pass plays, that drive, that first touchdown drive. I think he was 6 for 6 or something like that. So let's see him grow off of that run like he did in that game. He slid. He didn't push himself in that way. There was no concussions. And, you know, we could do without the interception, but I think that was a good performance for him, and I think we can see him grow from that.
Let me just say this, and Chris, you've got to get in on this too. I've said this to my partner Steve Tasker since the Titans game, and I love what Josh did against the Titans. I don't want to see him rein it in too much, though. You know, I want him taking chances with the ball once in a while, and I thought he was just slightly overly cautious against the Titans. You know what I mean? Just slightly.
Right, but I think what you have to remember is who they're playing, and they're playing a team that is conservative by nature, especially on offense. And so you want to minimize your own errors so you don't beat yourself. And I think we've had this discussion before. Through the first five games, the times when the Bills have had problems is when they've kind of stubbed their own toe or shot themselves in the foot. Use whatever cliche you want to use. And so I think there was a concerted effort to try to minimize that against a team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes themselves. And so it became who can be more error-free.
Yeah.
And all that being said, the Bills were still the only team that had a turnover in the game,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the play that Matty already referenced. So I think they felt if we can reduce our errors, we should be able to out-execute this Titans team because I think they feel they have the better quarterback, and it seems like the truth has bared that out.
That's
because
how it went, yeah.
Marcus Mariota isn't starting this week,
right?
And Ryan Tannehill is for the Titans. So I think that's why they took the approach they did. I'm hoping they kind of get back to, you know, giving Josh a little bit more of the free rein, so to speak. But I think they're also trying to recognize the fact this is a guy that's kind of learning as he goes.
Sure.
And he doesn't have it all mastered yet.
Nope, 16 NFL starts. And let me say, man, I want to get you in on this as well, this point. To me, and I've thought a lot about the Titans game because that's the only game we've had to think about for a couple of weeks. The most important part of the Buffalo, Josh and the Buffalo offense in the Titans game was the 4-minute offense in the fourth quarter.
With not your starting offensive lineman.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, cranking out first downs, spending the clock, making smart decisions with the ball. That was the best thing they did offensively against Tennessee.
And he's been great in the fourth quarter. If you look at a quarter, he needs to do better, and it's the third quarter. He's 16 of 30 in the third quarter, 140 yards, 53.3 completion percentage, and three interceptions. So if you're going to look at a quarter that, hey, we need to get better at, it's the third quarter.
And that's translated to their point differential, because that is their worst quarter in terms of point differential. They're a minus 17 this year in the third quarter. Coming out of the locker room after halftime, they've given up 27 and have only scored 10 points in the third quarter. And I think Josh's numbers are kind of a reflection of that.
All right, what else you got, Maddie? Third downs you see is an issue, right?
Yes. We are 24th in the league in converting third downs. 33.9% of the time we convert third downs. We do have the lowest attempts of third downs in the league with 62. I also looked at third and long situations. We've been in third and 10 or more 18 times, which is fifth least in the league. So it's a good thing that we're not getting into third and long situations, but that means you should probably be converting more than you are if you're not in third and long situations like that.
You want to be up around 40% to be consistent. I mean, if you're at least at the 40% mark, you're somewhat consistent on third down in this league, and they're tracking behind that right now by a good 6-7%. So that's got to be better. Part of the reason for that is because of their offensive pre-snap penalty rate. Even being on the bye last week, the Bills are tied for first in the league for pre-snap penalties with 22. And that's just way too many. And they've got to trim that back. Again, getting out of their own way. We've talked about this. They've really got to reduce that number. And if they do, maybe the third and longs that they have had will be fewer in number because they're not facing a first and 20 after a holding call.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, Maddie, you're onto something. Is, you know, this offense is ranked 10th in the league in terms of yardage produced, but the points are an issue, right? And all of the things you've talked about, third downs, Chris's pre-snap penalties, turnovers, play into really their trouble scoring points.
It all goes together, We're averaging 18 points a game. That's 25th in the league. We're allowing 14 points per game. That's a four-point differential right there. We're first in red zone touchdown percentage, but we are 28th in the league in red zone drives. We've been there 14 times. To be 28th in the league in red zone drives, that's something you want to see increase as the season goes on. If you're going to score more points, if you're going to get in the end zone more, and hopefully that red zone touchdown percentage can stay that way. But scoring 18 points a game, averaging that, you have to average more if you're going to want to go deep into the season and deep into the playoffs.
Yeah. So, and by the way, you're not picking nits here. These are all areas of improvement.
Yeah.
But now let's talk about the defense, and I fear that we might be really nitpicking here because this defense has been – seriously, somebody asked me this morning. I was on the radio with Howard Simon and Jeremy White this morning. What can they do better on defense? And I had to pause and think, let me think about that for a second. It's hard to find problems.
It's hard. This is really nitpicking. But I want to see Ed Oliver get a sack. And Chris, I saw you tweet that he gets double teamed a lot. So that's definitely a reason why he hasn't reached the quarterback yet. But this team is ranked 23rd, tied for 23rd in total sacks so far with 12. They're also 23rd with quarterback hits with 26. So you want to see this team get sacking the quarterback more. And to do that, Ed Oliver's gotta play in that game and get some sacks. So
yeah, and you hope that, you know, him getting double teamed has admittedly created more opportunities for the other guys on the defensive line, and we saw that in the Tennessee game. Jordan Phillips explodes for three sacks. Well, two of those were a direct cause and effect with Oliver gobbling up offensive linemen and Jordan getting in a one-on-one matchup and winning. And so now you hope that the pendulum kind of swings the other way for Ed, where people look at that film of Jordan Phillips and say, well, we can't leave this guy one-on-one all the time. And then maybe Ed sees a few more of those one-on-one matchups, because in one-on-one situations, and we saw this to a certain degree in the preseason, I mean, he went one-on-one with Quentin Nelson, and it was a stalemate.
Yeah,
and
it was great.
That's probably
watch.
One of the two best guards in the entire league. So if he gets one-on-one matchups, more often than not, he is going to win. Mm-hmm. It's just a question as to whether or not the pendulum has swung enough and the other guys around him have done enough to force opposing offenses to say, you know what, we've got to kind of spread the wealth with who we're going to double and when to give Ed those one-on-one opportunities to really make an impact on a game directly.
All right, Maddie, here's something about the Bills' defense. We had Levi Wallace on the show on Monday this week and talked with him about how he sees more balls. Mm-hmm. I mean, than Tre'Davious White does. Eventually, yeah. that will pay off in terms of a pick, I would think.
Yeah,
right?
It's time for Levi Wallace to get an interception. Trey White's had two. I think for this defense to continue to have success, he needs one. Tremaine Edmonds needs one. They're getting there in passes defended and things like that. They're high up there in, I think they're top 10 in passes defended. But I want Levi Wallace to get an interception.
I do, too. He does, too, by the way.
Well, yeah, but he's doing really well.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Despite
he
all
is,
the targets he that he gets, because, you know, Tre'Davious White is near the top of the league. I think he's third in the league right now in passer rating against. It's something like 27.9. It's a ridiculous number.
Dang.
But Levi Wallace, with all of the times that he's targeted in a given game, bigger body of work to have, he's still 69 passer rating against. That's really good.
Yep.
And granted, they haven't gone against the best quarterbacks in the world thus far, but still in all, I mean, for a guy that's getting targeted as much as he is, to have a passer rating against of under 70 collectively is pretty darn good, especially for a second-year player.
Yep.
I would submit Levi Wallace as the unsung hero of the Bills' defense so far.
Yeah. Guy,
he's only started 12 NFL games. We went to camp in July, end of July, and people were wondering, who's going to start at that corner? Will it be Levi Wallace? Will it be Phillip Gaines? Will it be Kevin Johnson? It was kind of – he locked down that cornerback spot right from day one of training camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing, too –
What do you mean, yeah?
Yeah, he has.
Okay.
And the other thing –
there was a dismissive –
No, I mean, the thing that amazes
– I guess
me,
so.
The thing that amazes me about his game is there are times where the guy he's assigned to, whether it's man or somebody's in his zone – the player will look completely open, and you'll watch the quarterback throw the ball, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, man, they're going to make this play. And then in, like, the last shred of a second, his arm is somehow in the passing lane, and he knocks it away. So while he doesn't come up with the interceptions that Matty is clearly craving here at this point in time, he does make the pass breakups. And, yeah, in an ideal world, you do want the picks. But if – I'm happy to take the passes knocked down, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we think about that one week one against the Jets. He is beat, and he has to turn his back to the quarterback and somehow gets back there and breaks that pass up. That would have been a 50-yard pass play.
When you agree with me, you got to be more emphatic about it.
Yeah, well,
yes, that's right. You know, something
I agree.
Like that.
Oh, okay.
More interceptions. Because
we'll see if we can hire a lackey for you. We'll put him off in the corner.
Where's
and he'll
my
bang,
lackey
he'll
today?
Bang the gavel and ring the bell for you and do all. Oh, the gong. We'll bring the gong back.
Hey, Matty, and this goes to your point about Wallace getting interceptions. The Bills can do a better job overall in turnover takeaway, most of that because of turnovers.
We are -3 with our turnover ratio, tied for 23rd in the league, which is something you definitely want to improve. We've scored only 3 points off of our 8 takeaways. That is not okay.
Right.
You have to do better than that. If you have 8 takeaways, you should be scoring way more. The Ravens have 38 points off of 8 takeaways or 9 takeaways, which is...
That's amazing. The Bills are so low.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason they're minus is because of all the turnovers that, you know, Josh was largely responsible for in the early part of the season. So if he can clean that up and the Bills defense can keep relatively the same pace, I mean, we're only a third of the way through the season. So you're probably talking about 24, 25 takeaways by the time you get to the end of the year. That's pretty good.
Sure.
I know in 2017, I want to say they had 30. And that's the last time they hit the 30 mark under Coach McDermott. So can they get there? I suppose they could. It's supposed to be an easy schedule the rest of the way, says the strength of schedule percentages from 2018. Again, get out of your own way. If they can avoid turning the ball over themselves, I think the defense will take care of that turnover margin.
Matty, on your list of things the Bills can and should do better after the bye, I think you left the biggest thing for last. I think this is the most important thing.
Yeah, let's eliminate those penalties.
Yeah.
42, tied for 18th in the league.
Ouch.
Like, no, let's do better than that.
With a capital N.
What'd you say, 20?
22 pre-snap penalties leads.
And these are
tied for the league.
They're avoidable. Like, these are things that are.
Yeah. What is it, 42 total?
Yeah, 42 total.
More than, yeah.
The Dolphins have 28. They're tied for second in the league with the least.
Oh, man. All right, so this weekend you got the Bills tonight with Fred Jackson.
Yep.
Post-game.
Mm-hmm.
Both on the Internet platforms,
and then MSG at 11:30.
Yep, okay.
A full version at 11:30, about an hour-long show. So.
Matty, thanks for this. You've managed to kind of center us as we approach the final 11 games.
We found our Quan here.
Yeah. We have.
Namaste.
Thank you, Matty. Manny Glab, Bills reporter on for Pegula Sports and Entertainment, joining us. And you can catch her, as she said, on Bills Tonight on Sunday. Chris and I coming back. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health from the Seneca Studios in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We're just chugging through the show today. We're here until 3. John Murphy with Chris Brown. He's here in place of Steve Tasker today. Steve will be back on Monday. Chug a motion right till 3 o'clock today. Feels good, doesn't it? Moving through the show like this. Good show.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Maddie brings a lot. Maddie brings her perspective, which is great. Lorenzo Alexander coming up at 2 o'clock. Time to talk with you about your thoughts on Sunday's game. And I get it, Chris. Okay, it's a tough sell. I'm pumped for it though, and I think most Bills fans coming are pumped for it.
Supposed to be great weather too.
Yep.
I got to check. Low 60s, and I don't think there's any precip in the forecast, which is certainly nice after what we saw in the middle of the week.
What are you most looking forward to Sunday against the Dolphins? That is our Twitter poll today. You can phone in a response at 803-0550 or toll free 1-888-550-2550. Phone line's open right now. You can send in a tweet. We'll read them on the tweet sheet, or you can vote in our Twitter poll. We got 767 votes in the Twitter poll so far. What are you most looking forward to? 37% of you say you're looking forward to the Bills run game. 32% say Bills versus the point spread. 22% say something else. And 10% say you're looking forward to Ryan Fitzpatrick's return to Buffalo. Let's hear from you. 803-0550.
That's pretty balanced.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what that, I'll be honest, I don't know what that means. Bills versus the point spread. What? Can they win by 16 and a half? Is that what you're looking forward to?
Who the hell cares about that?
I don't know. Well, bettors, gamblers.
People that have laid money on
it. I don't care about it. Well, let us hear from you. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. The tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills, from William on the tweet sheet. He says, I chose other. I would love to see a blowout, but we know that is not how this team operates. Just want to see a great game by all three phases. Start off passing, get Josh in rhythm, and when they're up by halftime, run the ball and play keep away with. I think they should start to run, too, by the way. I think start out by pounding the ball down their throat, see if they can stop you. I don't think they can.
I mean, they're giving up a ton.
Yeah.
Ton of yardage against on the ground. Where is it? It's they're giving up almost 170 yards rushing a game.
32nd in the NFL.
I mean, that is just dreadful.
Yeah.
I mean, that is and the Bills are almost at 140 yards a game. So if Singletary's back in the lineup, I mean, run it left, run it right, run it up the middle, just run it.
That's my choice in that Twitter poll is the Bills' run game. I want to see what it looks like against a team that is obviously susceptible to giving up yardage on the ground. And again, and by a team, the Buffalo Bills, who have kind of a new weapon returning to the lineup in Devin Singletary. I want to see how the run game adapts to having Singletary, how they portion out the snaps, how they portion out the touches, right? We agree. I think all of us agree. Devin Singletary, two games, start of the season, 10 rushes. He needs to see the ball more. And what does that look like? That's what I'm most looking forward to with the Buffalo victory on Sunday, which is obviously job one.
Right. And being out for what will amount to about a month of calendar time.
Well, 5 weeks since his last game.
Yeah. So even more than that. There's going to be a timing element that he's going to have to readjust to. I talked to him. I talked to Taron Johnson about how long it takes to get back up to speed, literally, with the speed of a regular season game when you haven't been immersed in it week after week. And Taron told me it's going to take a couple of series, maybe two or three series, you know, where you're like, oh, okay, this is how fast we got to go again, like that kind of thing. So hopefully it happens for them sooner rather than later when they're back in the lineup.
Do you think there's any trepidation on the part of Leslie Frazier or Sean McDermott to go right back to Taron Johnson as the nickel corner, given how good Saran Neal and Kevin Johnson and even Dean Marlowe have played, kind of portioning out those snaps?
Yeah, I meant to ask Coach Frazier that question earlier in the week, and it slipped my mind because – you're right. They have done well. And so do you just go back to what you had there in the first place? You only have a game of film to go off of it on? I don't know. It's certainly going to be interesting to see if they just make Taron Johnson a part of the equation there.
Yeah.
Or if he is the full-time nickel guy and everybody else kind of falls by the wayside. I think there is an element of that committee nickel that Coach Frazier likes, namely Dean Marlowe, when the other team goes heavy personnel. When they go 12 personnel on first or second down, Dean Marlowe is in the game because he's bigger, stronger, holds up better. And Saran Neal to a lesser extent, much the same thing. 6 foot guy, good size, good meat on his bones, you know, can hold up in the run front, even when they go 11 personnel. So there's an element to that that kind of specializes the position that much further by using different personnel there. It's almost a counterpoint to the way offenses use different personnel groupings. You know, Leslie Frazier's kind of doing the same thing with his nickel package.
Yeah. I'll be interested to watch that on Sunday. All right, the lowdown's coming up. Lorenzo Alexander, when we return, come on back with us. An hour to go. One Bills Live presented by Collided Health. Live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.